You're probably going to need one.
Or just so you know, as Kelsey goes by affectionately, Big Lou.
Big
Lou. Big Lou. Isn't that correct, Kels?
Some people.
All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Call commuting for a work session today on case number PU14-223. And what is the date today? November 26th. Is that right, Julie Prescott, since I know you all? It is. Perfect. Like I said, approximately 9 o'clock. It's on the Metal Arc Midstream Company's 8-inch crude oil pipeline. I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Crisman?
I also have no opening comments.
All right. Commissioner Fedorchak, this is your portfolio, so I'll turn it over to you.
All righty. And I'm going to probably turn it over to Kelsey and Julie to walk through kind of the current status on this case, where we're at with the depth issues, the waivers, and the draft order. So whoever is best to proceed.
Well, last week, I guess I'm not sure exactly which day it was, we had received updated copies of the as-built construction documents, and I believe Julie has been combing through those. She would probably be best to speak on those. With respect to the requests that were made of Meadowlark for some sort of letter or affidavit from Colt Rail Terminal or the owner or operator of Colt Rail Terminal, I have yet to receive anything on that as of this morning before I came up here.
Okay.
And that pertains to the residences within 500 feet of the tie-in at the Colt Rail Terminal.
So that is, they provided the affidavit to us saying, here's why we couldn't, there's no reasonable alternative. We'd like a little bit more substantive information from the owners of the Colt Rail facility saying, here's why we won't allow them to go through our yard.
Correct. We had requested an affidavit from the Colt Rail Terminal verifying the affidavit that Meadowlark provided saying mm-hmm. Colt Rail Terminal told us we could not have the tie-in anywhere else.
Didn't we have a pretty good record on that, too, in our questions to them about why the tie-in had to be on that side?
Yes, well, I believe the testimony was, you know, largely predicated on the fact that the Colt Rail Terminal was already in existence when the gathering line was constructed, and therefore that's where the project had to be routed.
No, I think what you guys are doing is great, but for me personally, I think there was a lot. I thought they were pretty good about explaining why it had to come in that spot and all the challenges, and we could put that in order.
Well, we had asked for more information for the record to substantiate what they were saying, and so we've gotten an affidavit from them.
Correct.
Basically from saying the same thing that they said at the hearing.
Yes.
And so I think it would be helpful to get that from the Colt Rail Terminal, and then I think that issue is settled. To me, that shows no reasonable alternative.
Yeah, and in my last correspondence with Meadowlark's attorney, John Morrison, it sounded like they were working on it. They didn't know how long it would take, but he indicated that they were, trying to get that affidavit or letter or whatever.
Are they eager to get this on the agenda for next week?
Are they?
Yeah.
I believe they want it on the agenda as soon as they can.
Okay. Because we did, offer to get it on the agenda the last meeting. If they could have gotten us the information by that Tuesday, and I don't think that they seemed super eager at that point. So I'm just trying to get a feel for how eager the company is to get this wrapped up.
Is there some disconnect here, or is it just me that's thinking all we're really asking for is like a little short letter from Colt Rail Terminal?
Right, and I made it clear we're not looking for some great manifesto or anything, just a simple letter acknowledging the statement that Meadowlark made in its affidavit was, in fact, true, here from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't need to be some big, huge scientific documentation. Just we didn't want the pipeline going under the area where we drive and operate, and we need full access to that and don't want a pipeline going through it, period. Good enough. So I do, though, think it's important because it's the basis for no reasonable alternative. And if we're doing these on a case-by-case basis. So if we're granting we're essentially granting the waivers that the company couldn't get. We need to have a sound record to base that on. So that's is that settled on the waiver issue for you guys?
Absolutely.
Okay. Then we have the depth of cover.
Go ahead. Your microphone's not on there, Julie.
So I had looked at, they provided, and they refer to them as revised as-built in their cover letter.
Is this the second?
This is the second
okay.
set, the revised set. And so it, what it shows is there's a plan view looking down at the top. Below that, there's the profile view, which is, you know, the cross cut that shows generally the elevation of the ground surface and then the profile of the pipe under that. And then towards the back, they have their as-built weld logs, which show ground elevations to the hundredth of a foot, top of the pipeline elevation to the hundredth of a foot, and then that difference, which is the depth of cover. So I went through the column that says depth of cover, and I placed it on a map. It's very, actually the pattern is, the numbers are slightly different in places, but the pattern is essentially the same as what I'd shown you guys previously, that there's the areas in yellow are those areas that are, depth of cover is less than 4 feet.
How much less? What's the what's the shallowest?
I highlighted some areas here that were questions. And we'd raised these questions in the call, Kelsey. There's some areas where it shows negative depth of cover, which would imply that the pipeline is above the ground, where these stretches are. And those, where the blue is where the valves, where they tell us where the valves would be. And so we had asked why in the call, is there something else there? They didn't provide anything additional to us. What is that? Why would that be? So there's no more information on that. There's a few spots where, there's one spot here where they're showing half a foot in the new revised plans. And it's just out in the middle of, there doesn't seem to be any reason or explanation why. There's places where, there's numerous places where it's less than 2 feet.
Mm-hmm. In the revised plan.
So don't have any more answers on what this means or what it's supposed to reflect.
Well, and this is one of the biggest challenges with siting a pipeline that already exists. So it's a key point for us to verify that the pipe is constructed in a manner that is in uniformity with our rules.
Well, it's important to note that, you know, every applicant, and it's no different in this case, signs the order provisions verifying that the pipe will be constructed at a depth of 48 inches or greater.
And they testified to that point.
Correct.
What is their answer back when what is their answer? They testified that it's deep.
Since they've provided the revised documents, there hasn't been a whole heck of a lot of discussion or explanation for. There was an explanation given for why the first set of as-built documents were, in their opinion, incorrect or measured incorrectly, I believe was my understanding of it. Julie could probably explain that better than I could because there was some engineering speak involved.
They just said that their topography ground shots were too far away from the x-ray shots of the pipeline and taken at large intervals, leaving gaps in the data and inaccuracies. Mm. What that means, because they show a station and they're indicating that at this station, which is actually to the tenth of a foot, this is the elevation, and here's the ground elevation. They don't say there's no right or left offset given, so the assumption would be it's supposed to be at that spot. We don't have any additional information.
Well, this is, in my opinion, this is a showstopper. I mean, I don't know how you begin to proceed not knowing what the depth is. I mean, if the depth is accurate at, let's say, 2 feet at spot X, we didn't have something in the record that says why we're agreeing to waive that, or that it's wrong. I mean, it's up to them to prove the depth of their pipeline. Otherwise, I'd have a hard time voting for this thing.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's just there's something that's off. I mean, let me back up here. Okay. Why would the pipe depth be different? If there's something that when it was a gathering line, if it went up to something above ground like you're talking about and then went back down, there might be cause for variation. But otherwise, it does seem like their data is just messed up to where if they would have just built it all as one system, it certainly would have been about the same depth. So that's the question. It just doesn't make
sense. Well, this one is all one system, right? This is just one line. It's, you know, this.
That's what they claim it is. But if it's a series of gathering lines, who knows? I'm just saying it's up to them to tell us what they did. What's that, Jules?
This is actually the entire system with the additional gathering.
Julie, in the revised data that we received last week, how many places show a pipe depth of less than 48 inches, not including the above-ground facilities, the block valves?
I'd have to count all the yellow hatch marks, but
I mean, is it more than a couple?
Oh, it's more than a couple.
Okay.
Is it a dozen?
I mean,
like a dozen?
Oh, far more than a dozen. And in fact, some places here, they were so close together. There's, you know, it's just continuous kind of yellow
stretches,
continuous stretch, or essentially it's a continuous stretch.
I would offer this up as a thought. That you should go back to them, and if it needs to be written correspondence saying the commission met, we're basically fine with everything except four, you need to verify, maybe even put out there, have them go some actual borings to verify depth. I think we did that in different cases.
Yeah, we did.
And
we did that in the pipeline that we just approved the revise. We had them go out and give us the borings from their construction inspection or something and verify the depth.
If it's the one I'm thinking, this is Pat Fawn. If it's the one I'm thinking of, they were out after they had pigged the pipeline. They had found some places that they needed to check,
right.
And they provided the depth of the pipe at all those locations.
Yep.
The depth on this pipe, if it's 2 feet or something even less than 30 inches, I don't think it meets the Part 195, the federal minimum requirements.
Yep. Well, they signed the certification document basically saying that it will be, and we have documentation that suggests it isn't. So there's a pretty big discrepancy there that needs to be resolved. Do we hire construction inspectors on the to go back and look at reclamation, walk these lines on these conversions?
We have on a couple of them.
Is that an option here to do as well?
What was the application fee in this one?
I'm showing $20,000.
So we should have some left.
That'd be pretty close.
Most of our post-construction, though, they didn't go out and do any borings. They would look at the construction phase. They'd look at reclamation.
Reclamation mostly for post-construction.
Yeah.
But could we ask them to do borings? I mean,
yes.
If we wrote the scope up that way.
Right.
Well, I just throw that out there. I mean, ideally, the company would have the data or get it and provide it to us. But I don't want to hold this up indefinitely and it's their citing a fee, it's their dollars. So if we want to see what the company thinks about using that, or how, what do you guys think of that, getting the third-party construction inspectors to verify the depth so we can move on?
Well, at the very least, they're going to have to acknowledge these questions. It sounds like there's spots where you probably see the pipe.
Right.
You don't really need to do boring or anything. You can walk along and see it sticking out. And I don't know. I mean, I could have written a note down wrong. These are certainly unofficial, but I'm looking at my notes from late September, and John Miller, I wrote down that this is buried at 5 feet deep, not even four.
Right.
So.
At the hearing.
I mean, what we're looking at in both the initial and it sounds like with the revised construction documents sort of bear a different story. So I, again, as Commissioner Kalk was saying, there's something missing here or not right with these documents. Maybe the revised documents aren't correct, but you know, in terms of public safety, I think there's going to have to be a definite showing that.
Well, I would. I think
are buried at a depth where a rancher isn't going to strike one when he's digging a post hole, or.
And I think the other concern, to me, at this point now, it's not just about how deep this is. If they contracted to get this, what then was a gathering line put in, and they think it's buried 5 feet deep, but all the evidence indicates that it's not. Maybe whoever put this in for them didn't use the pipe that they think that they got, didn't weld to the qualifications that they think that they received. There could be all kinds of things wrong with this if they didn't get what they were supposed to be getting when they contracted
right,
for it.
It certainly opens the door to a multitude of questions, for sure.
Well, then what do we do?
I'll throw this out again. I think that it's back to them. They have to provide documentation that says the depth is accurate and with some verifications every 10 miles that they've verified what, you know, they give us a document that says everything's at 41 inches. And then they go do bores to verify that. And then in our post-construction, if we approve it, we would still go back and verify again some key spots.
I think that's probably one way to get at some of the other greater concerns, too, is get the third-party construction going, verification and make them do some borings and verify some of this information so we can check. Because, I mean, quite honestly, they've said stuff that isn't verifiable by their data, so their data is suspect.
I'm confused what you mean by the third-party, Julie, because that usually, has until after the project is approved, then we'd have the third-party inspectors come out and do the post-construction inspection, so it would be after an approval.
Well, but this is already constructed. So I think on when we're converting lines, we could use the third-party inspectors. The line is already in the ground, so there's no permit to construct. It's already constructed, so the third-party inspectors can be used to go out and verify.
No, I agree with that, but not until after we'd approve the approve it as a transmission line.
Why?
Because you have to approve the project as a transmission line before you'd have our inspectors out there. You go inspect it.
But couldn't we make an approval that hinges on that inspection being completed and indicating that it meets all our criteria?
It's not our job to prove their case. So what I'm hearing you're saying is that we should approve it and have these people go out, our third-party inspectors go out and verify the depth. I don't like that idea. I wouldn't approve it until I know the depth.
Well, I'm saying maybe we need to think differently about how we use third-party inspectors on conversions of lines that are already in the ground. I mean, I get that we haven't used them that way in the past because we've used them for inspecting lines that are, we get them a permit to construct, so it's after we give the order. But what's stopping us legally or from a procedure standpoint from using third-party inspectors to verify that the reclamation is good, that the depth of cover is appropriate on a line that's already been built before we give the permit? Is there some reason we can't do that?
To me, it doesn't make sense.
I don't think that there's any legal reason why you couldn't, but it's a matter of...
It's a limit what the siting dollars are supposed to for. They're for us to do the case. So we probably have very broad authority to do what we want with that siting dollars.
When I think the public has a different, you know, we're being asked to permit something that's already in the ground. So the questions come to us, well, how do you do that? I mean, how do you show that you don't know what the depth is, you don't know any of this, how do you prove that? So I'm saying maybe we think differently about it and use this third-party construction inspector to help us verify what the company is saying. Because as this company's shown us, they said that it was buried to 48 inches and or deeper, and we have documentation from them showing that it isn't. So that makes me...
In lieu of them proving it or in addition?
Probably in addition. I mean, I don't think we go out and make their case. I agree with you on that. It's up to them to make their case, but we have to be confident in their case. And right now I'm not.
I think it's just a matter of timing. It might be
and it sounds to me like we're talking about the same kind of a third party and post-construction inspection and debating whether we should get that done as part of our approval process or whether they should get it done and bring it to us and show it to us and then we approve it. And
well, I think we typically lead that, right? The company doesn't lead the third-party inspections.
No, I was just thinking of another option, though, would be for the company. You know, the companies tend to want to do that kind of operation on their line, but a third-party inspector can observe while they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so because a third-party inspector may not know, because this pipeline already exists, you know, they would have to have a lot of company help anyway. But so they could observe it as the company was doing it.
That's a good option.
I guess I think what we're at the question is, do we make our order contingent on that, or do we wait to make the order until that work is done?
I think if they could come back with some documentation that showed the pipe was below the depth that we want it to be, I would be okay approving it. And then have the post-construction, if they find something different, then you suspend the order until they fixed it. But I don't know that. I think it's still, to my opinion, it's still up to them to come back with making their case that what they testified is correct. And then I think we can debate how we want to verify that. I would have a hard time supporting it unless they got some documentation that shows what the depth is, because that's the basis here.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, you'd be satisfied if the applicant were to take a physical inspection of the site using boring to verify the pipe depth in the locations that the second set of as-built documents, where those documents indicate a pipe depth of less than 48 inches?
Well, let's see what it comes back and says. If it says it's 23 inches, then we got a whole other set of problems. But if it comes back and says it's 45, then they need to correct their data. And then I like Commissioner Fedorchak's idea of having some third party do it at some point in time. I agree with that, too.
I think, you know, to take what you're saying just a step further and combine what Pat suggested, if they're going to do that, let's get a third party there to witness it at the same time. And then we can have it all done. And we can be assured that there isn't. I mean, I trust the company. I do want to trust the company. They've, you know, come back to us twice with documentation that contradicts what they said under oath and signed on their certification documents. So I think that gives me reason to say we need to verify what they're providing and before we sign off on the order. And that shouldn't take a long time. I mean, we can get a third party as quickly as they can, I'm sure. So we'd want to be expedient and not drag it out.
It's in their court. I mean, they want us to make a decision, give us data that's accurate. Okay, if that data is accurate, there's no way I would support this pipeline. That's if the company wants to hear that, I'll just say it.
Well, it would run opposed to the provision that they assigned, which would revoke the order.
So they've got a problem. Yeah. If this data is accurate, then there's very slim chance that I ever approve it if this data is accurate. But then there's another set of problems. They've built a gathering line that doesn't meet federal code. So it's up to them to get out there quickly and figure out what this depth is, because either way, there's been Pandora's box has been opened up here.
Mm-hmm.
Either the data is incorrect and they've got a PHMSA violation, or the data is not correct. They need to get it corrected and get it back to us. I don't know. I could be
corrected and verified.
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys have a clear info to take back. Okay.
Absolutely.
And who's the attorney on this one?
John Morrison.
Gotcha.
So a little side note, did you know John Morrison is a very accomplished organist?
I'm not surprised.
He is awesome. Anyway, just a little side note.
He plays the organ, and Gilbertson plays the piano.
I know.
What's your talent?
I play bass guitar.
Yeah? You guys are all?
Cool. Okay, so we have the issue on the waivers. They'll get us a letter, I hope, from Colt Railterm. Simple letter. And the issue on the depth of cover. What else are we still
back to the issue of the residences within 500 feet. Am I understanding you correctly? You're not going to require the applicant to obtain waivers from those remaining houses, or is it your intent to find no reasonable alternative in the event they are able to provide that letter that we're talking about?
I believe that in this case, if they can, that there is no reasonable alternative, they can get us that letter from Colt Railterm to verifying that when this was constructed. And then I would be willing to, in this case, and I think these are case-by-case basis, in this case, that would be no reasonable alternative, and then we wouldn't need the remaining waivers.
To find no reasonable alternative here, I think there needs to be a little bit of a discussion about economic considerations. I know that the tie-in is not theirs to move, but I think just for the record, would it be appropriate to discuss whether or not require, you know, under some hypothetical, if an applicant doesn't have control over a tie-in point, is moving that tie-in point at their cost, is that an economic consideration? Because the law says no reasonable alternatives exist, and economic considerations may not be a consideration in that finding. Is this scenario an economic consideration, or?
I think it's economic considerations alone cannot be.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. It can be part of the discussion. Yes.
Yep. And I think there's functional considerations and safety considerations in here. I view, in terms of crossing that rail terminal, the railroad issue as well, and you know, kind of they're kind of boxed in. Wherever they try to move it, they either get closer, they either still have the homes, or they have the railroads to deal with, and the rail terminal, all of which are functional and safety considerations in addition to, you know, beyond the economics.
Okay. I just want to make sure we got that on the record.
Okay. I don't know if
I agree completely. It's not economic, it's safety and constructability. There's other environmental issues that come to play. This is to make sense going in.
Okay.
If you put it over their side, you got another house that comes into play. Now this, yeah, I agree with you.
Randy, anything more on that?
Okay. That's good.
Thanks, Kelsey.
We're clear on what we need to do.
Just have one follow-up, just a general question to Pat. Okay. Let's go down this little road just briefly. If they verify that this is not built to the federal regs, then what? We can't just ignore that.
Well, there's...
give me a couple hypotheticals.
There's a couple, hypotheticals. One is that it's a gathering line. It stays a gathering line,
yep.
And the gathering line is not subject to the Part 195. Because it's not near a unusually sensitive area,
okay,
they would not have to meet the depth of cover requirements. But when they change it to a transmission line, of course, then it becomes jurisdictional to Part 195.
The 195 depth doesn't apply to gathering lines?
Does not apply to gathering lines that are not under the jurisdiction of Part 195, which would be gathering lines that aren't
or whatever
in near a USA.
All right, so I misspoke a little bit then, that if it turns out they're not the right depth for a transmission line, they haven't violated any federal laws.
Yeah, no, I can't remember if they testified that they had constructed it according to Part 195.
They did. That's the part that stuck in my head, because they testified they built it towards those
standards. And it was 5 feet deep, is what you're saying they testified to.
So I don't know the specific depth.
I have another question, though, too, is that if you've got a company that comes in and they testify and it's wrong, and when you find out it's wrong, we just let that go?
I was thinking about that, too. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if the witness, you know, you have the witness recant, or you dig in and find out why they didn't have the right information.
Let's just wait and see how this all plays itself out. But I guess, speaking for me, if it turns out that they testified to all these things and we go out and verify and the depths aren't even close, there needs to be some follow-up, from my opinion. You can't just let it go.
I still am hoping to think that, you know, some of these different images didn't match up right, and I cannot hardly believe that they'd have this pipeline that distance and in places it's sticking out of the ground, and no one has said anything in all this time. So I just wonder if the information that they sent us is somehow inaccurate. And
well, don't they verify their own data? I mean, they've got engineers too that would.
These are not stamped by a registered person.
Right.
And possibly the company didn't look at the information they received from their contractor or whoever did the work. And so what they have is this bad set of data.
Well, their order's contingent on this, so I would think that the company would pay attention to what they're giving us and make sure it meets our standards.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Or, you know, we did ask them to clarify and to tell us if there was anything wrong with the data and the profiles, and we got something back that still looks to be a problem. So I don't know if they're going to be able to fix that problem without doing testing in the field.
If I'm understanding the commission correctly, what we discussed here today, even if a third set of data came in and showed that it's buried at 10 feet...
You're still
requiring a physical verification of that, correct?
Or a really strong explanation as to why this stuff popped up twice.
Right.
Yeah.
And is wrong. I mean, it would have to be really convincing that this data was just, you know, is totally off. And, you know, and I like Julie's point, that whatever verification is provided, it's stamped by a professional who can certify that it's accurate. So, okay.
All right. Anything else? Okay. All right. Do we want to...
My standpoint.
I guess it's up to them to get back to you and then let us know about scheduling another work session. There's no sense in scheduling something now, is there?
No. So. I don't think so.
Okay.
Keep in touch.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Close the work session. Thank you all.
Thanks, you guys.